I don't know where the voice is, but we'll go as long as it lasts. I discovered something today. I've always, since I was a kid, had something of a fear about losing my eyesight. I started wearing glasses when I was in the third grade, 9 years old. And each few months, I would have to get stronger glasses for a long time. And it continued long enough that I got afraid that I was going blind, that it wasn't going to stop. And so I've always lived with a kind of protectiveness about eyesight and of all the things that gives me horror, it would be to go blind. But I realized that there's also something else, and that is if I couldn't sing. And I may not sing well, but I do love to sing. And to sit there trying to preserve what little voice I have and not sing is really hard. But yeah, I enjoyed hearing the other parts around me. And so it's good to be reminded of some things sometimes. And I decided I was just going to say some things tonight that were kind of on my heart, I guess. One of those come to Jesus meetings or something like that, you know. And I want to say, first of all, that Janice and I are enjoying being a part of this family here, a growing congregation that has new visitors every week. The Lord has blessed us with approximately 100 new members per year for the last 3 years. And I want to put in a disclaimer here, more for my sake than for yours, because you already know it. But I want you to know that I know it. It's not the preacher. I'm not doing anything different than I have done for 40 plus years now preaching. And I haven't always been a part of a congregation that was growing this rapidly. I'm doing the same thing I've done my entire life, except maybe preaching sermons that are about 10 minutes shorter, and that still hurts my feelings. When I sent a resume to your preacher selection committee back over 5 years ago now, because you took over a year to find a preacher, the committee said that they wanted 2 sermon CDs. And I did something that would be rather foolish in most people's mind. I sent the CDs of the last 2 Sundays' sermons, Sunday mornings and Sunday nights, and I just said, this is what you're going to get. I've been preaching here for 14 years, and this is last Sunday's lessons and the Sunday before's lessons. Because I didn't want a job where people would be disappointed in what they got. I didn't want a job where people were thinking that they were going to get something that they didn't get. I wanted any surprises to be pleasant surprises. And I did my homework in looking at this congregation, and I wanted you to do your homework. Now, you can determine whether or not you did, but churches and preachers both have personalities. And it's not saying anything negative about either one if some churches and some preachers don't match up. But the Lord has blessed us. And we all want to say and be sure that He knows that we know that He gets all the credit for everything. I did run across you always run across studies and statistics, but I like this one, and so I'll quote it. According to a recent study, socially conservative churches that demand high commitment from their members have grown faster than other religious denominations in the last decade. The denominations that recorded the highest growth were the conservative Christian churches and Churches of Christ with 18.6%, Assemblies of God with 18.5%, and then it gives others from there down. Then it flips the coin over and tells you which ones are negatively growing, and I'm not going to list those, but they were ones that have made some, what we would term, some very liberal decisions in recent years about who would be accepted into their priesthood, etc. But I'm not going to give you who those were. But the director of the research center that did this research said, when I looked at those that were declining, most were moderate or liberal churches, and the more liberal the denomination, by most people's definition, the more people that they were losing. I like that statistic, and so I thought I would share that with you. With this growth that we're enjoying, has come some new challenges, and we're facing one of those challenges now. We're outgrowing our facilities much faster than we anticipated, and we just finished one building over here and are in need of another, and so we're addressing that challenge. But I want to talk to you a little bit tonight about another challenge that concerns me more than the space does. Many of you have come here from other congregations. Many of you were leaders in those congregations. And quite frankly, some of you came here because you were leaders and other congregations, and there were some things that were happening that you fought for years, and you got tired of fighting. And so you were looking for a place where you wouldn't have to fight, and where you could feel some security, and you wanted some peace. And I want to say to you, and have said to some of you, that I fully understand and appreciate that. I understand that you needed some rest. I have been in similar situations where I felt like I had to have some rest from the constant turmoil that I felt like that I was living in. And I want to say to you that I hope that you're getting your batteries recharged. And I hope that you're finding rest and peace. But that leads me to my concern. And the concern that I want to voice is it's really easy to get lost in growth. And for some reason, for this age, it appears that anonymity is desirable. It's that way on the internet. And I have a certain resentment about that, just a personal thing, okay? Because if you can't see somebody and you can't talk to somebody, when you read what they have to say, you give it equal voice with everybody else. And there are some idiots out there. And if you knew them, you wouldn't take what they had to say seriously. But they get to this anonymity, gives them an equal voice with people who have thought out well what they have to say, and they have something to say. And I noticed some of that same thing, not only in the internet, but, and while I'm right there, let me just say to you young people, as well as everybody else, don't say anything anonymously that you wouldn't say if everybody knew who was saying it, because you're not anonymous with God. God knows everything that you're saying. But it's really easy to get in the habit of enjoying the rest and saying no to things for a while that you originally intend for it to be just for a while. And if you're not careful, it'll get to be a lifestyle. It'll get to be a habit that you'll say no, and you'll continue to say no. And so I want to say to you, for your sake, as well as for the sake of this church, but more than anything else, for your sake, don't get so comfortable in saying, I can't do that, or I'm not going to do that, that you find that to be a lifestyle, because it gets really hard to break when you do. You need a ministry for your own benefit. You need a ministry. You need something that you're doing. It doesn't have to be something outstanding. It doesn't have to be something that everybody else sits up and takes notice about. But you need a ministry that you know that you are making a positive contribution to the Lord's kingdom. And if you don't, you will die. Because if we're not progressing and we're not developing what God's given us, then a time will come when we'll lose it. And we'll lose it by attrition, because we don't use it and then we get nervous about using it. And that's really something interesting that happens. Or we'll lose it because we just lose the desire to do it. And that can happen. And that's really scary. That you get to a point where you just don't even think about it anymore. You've said no for so long, or you've set back and let someone else do it for so long that it feels natural. I can't teach a Bible class. I can't lead a public prayer. I can't do that because of my job. I can't do this because I don't have the time. I can't do that because I've never done it before. And it goes on and on and on, doesn't it? There's no end. And with some, it becomes an attitude. It becomes a mood. It becomes a lifestyle. It becomes a pattern that just keeps on, keeps us from ever doing anything. And I want to talk about, and I know this is probably the most generic sermon that I could ever probably preach, but I want it to be that way, because I don't want you to feel like, I want you to not feel like that somebody needs to come up with something for you to do. You need to come up with something for you to do. You see things that need to be done. And it can be something physical. It can be calling people. It can be going to a hospital. It can be writing cards. It can be any number of thousands of things that can be done. But we get in the habit of waiting for somebody to come up to us and ask us to do something. And when nobody does, we feel justified in not doing something. And I don't think God's too happy with that. One of the things, I want to talk about some things generically that we can all do. There's not one single person that's here that cannot, number one, you can love. And what that, one of the things that does many, many, many things. But one of the things that does is it creates an atmosphere in a church. And I'm saying that we basically have that atmosphere here. There's nobody throwing stones at anybody else. Nobody's trying to choke anybody else to death. Nobody's constantly harassing someone else. We're blessed that we don't have those kind of problems. And so we do have, and John made a comment a few moments ago about being pilgrims and then going back out there into the world tomorrow morning. Well, you know, that's a very real thing, and don't take it for granted, because when you can come here and there are people who do love one another, it's not that way at your job, not at least most people's job. And so we can come here and we have one another's interest at heart. And we can sing together and we can pray together and we can study God's word together and we can just eat donuts together and we can go to class together and we can communicate. And it's just an enjoyable time. And it's not every congregation where it's true that when you leave you feel better than when you came. there are some congregations that you feel worse. And that's really sad. And it's hard to even want to invite your friends to such a place as that. And so we're blessed. But it's something that we can do an even better job of. 1 John chapter 4, verse 19 says, we love him because he first loved us. There's something really interesting about that verse. The word him is not in the text. Or maybe it's not in the text. It's one of those that some texts have it, some don't. And so you can take it. It's a pretty interesting lesson to stop and think about. What does it mean if it says we love him because he first loved us? Well, it's pretty easy to love somebody who loves you, isn't it? But what if it says we love because he first loved us? Boy, that broadens the scope out a lot, doesn't it? And actually, the best texts have it that way. We love because he first loved us. He taught us how to love. He taught us in word and he taught us in deed. And we had a series of lessons not too long ago about learning to love as Jesus loves. And it's maybe the greatest challenge that you'll ever have in your life. We love most of the people that we love because we have the most in common with them. And it may be blood. We love family members because we got to. We just have all this heritage together, you know. We may not like one another particularly, but we love one another, right? And you have those family ties. And at least in principle, theoretically, that's true in the church. Because it is because of a common blood that is what we have in common. But we don't have a lot of other things in common with everybody else. There are a few people in the congregation that we have a pretty good bit in common with. But most of the people we don't, do we? And so to learn to love one another is an incredible challenge. And somebody says, well, I just can't get along with so-and-so. Yes, you can. Think about it this way. I don't know if God is going to let two people in heaven that hate one another. I mean, he might have to choose. And if you can't stand and you hate someone here on this earth, then how are you going to get along in heaven? And if the incentive is right, you can learn to love somebody as Jesus loved. You might not ever particularly like them, but you can learn to love somebody because that's a command. You can even learn to love your enemies, people that are trying to kill you. And so don't say, I can't get along with somebody. I just can't love that person. Yes, you can. Because the incentive is really there. We just sometimes pass it off. And if it really came down to the point where we knew that there was going to be a decision made about whether I was going to get in heaven or that person that I just can't stand is going to get in heaven, and I had a 50-50 chance, we might learn to get along with them a little better, mightn't we? At Philippi, Paul and Silas were beaten and thrown into prison. And yet, because of their efforts, and you know, I don't see very much kindness that was given to them there. But because of their efforts, when they left, there was a church there. And he will write back to that church with obvious feelings. You can love the unlovable. And so one thing that we absolutely can do is we can develop an atmosphere of love in the congregation. And that love always... Wherever you see it, there's one thing you know about love. It gives. It serves. That's one characteristic that without it, there is no love. The second thing that we can all do, and it's really pretty basic and simple, is we can encourage others. You may have heard about this story before, but I was really impressed with it in those who were adults during World War II probably have at least heard this story, but let me read it to you. There is a book that has been written about this, and it's called Once Upon a Town. 10 days after the attack on Pearl Harbor, a group of citizens in North Platte, Nebraska, heard a rumor that soldiers from their town, part of Nebraska National Guard Company D, would be coming through on a troop train on their way to the West Coast. 500 people showed up at the train depot with food, letters, and love to give to the boys. When the train showed up, it was not the Nebraska National Guard Company D boys on board. It was the soldiers from the Kansas National Guard Company D. And after a few awkward moments, a woman handed a young man she had never seen before the gifts that she intended to give to her own son. Everyone else followed that lead, and there were hugs and prayers and love shared all around. It was a spontaneous act of genuine devotion that touched both the soldiers and the people who came to the depot that day. That alone would have been a beautiful illustration of the willingness to sacrifice for one another, but the story continues. A few days later, a 26-year-old woman named Ray Wilson wrote a letter to the editor of the local paper recounting the profound experience they had shared that night. Then she suggested the town organize a canteen so that they could do something similar for every troop train that came through, and she offered to lead the effort as a volunteer. For the next 4.5 years, the people of North Platte and surrounding communities met every troop train that came through their town. Every day, they prepared sandwiches, cookies, cold drinks, and hot coffee. They had baskets of magazines and books to give away to the soldiers and snacks for the train. There were even birthday cakes for anyone having a special birthday. They did this some days for as many as 8,000 soldiers and sailors. The statistics are staggering. By the time the last train arrived on April the 1st, 1946, 6 million soldiers had been blessed by the North Platte Canteen. 45,000 volunteers had served faithfully until the war was over, and most of our troops had been transported home. Most of the troops had only 10 minutes to sprint from the train to grab some food, maybe a dance with a pretty girl, hear the appreciation of those present, and sprint back before the train left without them. But in those 10 minutes, they got more than a meal. They received a dose of unconditional love that they remembered later, during the heat of battle, as well as decades after the war was over. Bob Green, whose book, Once Upon a Town, made the North Platte Canteen story known to the world, wrote that as he interviewed those few surviving soldiers who had experienced the canteen firsthand, there was a universal reaction from the men who by that time were in their late 70s and 80s. They cried. If there are some things that you can't do, there's something you can do. You can encourage those who are doing. You can notice the efforts of other people who put forth efforts. Young men who wait on the Lord's table. Not only young men, but every old dog likes a pat on the head every now and then, doesn't he? When you see somebody putting forth an effort, make a point to encourage them. It doesn't cost very much, does it? Our deacons need to have encouragement. We're not serving the Lord for the praise of men, but we really do need one another. And we need one another's help. When a child begins to walk, you encourage them. And consequently, they learn how to walk much more quickly because of that praise that they receive from you. In one particularly good way that we can encourage one another is through prayer and by letting one another know that we're praying for us. Any of you ever had the experience of having your name mentioned in prayer and giving thanks? Well, the preacher gets more than his fair share of that. But I hope that all of you have had that experience, because it's an incredibly uplifting experience for someone to know that someone is thanking God for your efforts. Because it really means that they're doing that, they're either incredibly hypocritical or they really are sincere about appreciating what you're doing. And so let's encourage one another. And then thirdly, and all of these things are obviously tied together, something that every one of us can do is we can help. Not everybody is a leader, but everybody can help. I ran across this little article about Michael Jordan when he re-entered the NBA in 2001 with the Washington Wizards. For a while, they passed a rule, a really strange rule, and it was a no-shooting rule for Michael Jordan. And the reason that they passed that rule was because in an early exhibition match, Jordan's teammates all stood around and waited for him to perform. And the following day, Jordan went to the coach, Doug Collins, and he talked to him, and they came out and addressed the team, and they put a stop to that. And Jordan said, everybody wants to sit back and watch. But one reason why we became successful in Chicago was because we had to play as a unit instead of just watching. What makes me more effective is other guys stepping up and being a threat. If I'm the only threat, then I'm doing all the work, and obviously that's not going to work. Jordan held fast to the no-shoot rule, even with the outcome of the game on the line. He was past the ball with his team trailing by one with less than 5 seconds left, but he didn't take the shot. He passed it back. I just wonder how many of us as Christians have fallen into the trap of being spectators rather than participants. And we expect others to perform, and our job becomes to be the critic. God doesn't need critics in His church. He doesn't need any critics in His church. He needs people who have a heart to serve. And it can be anything. It can be bringing flowers and putting flowers, fresh flowers somewhere. It can be anything, any talent that God has given you that is a right talent. I'm not talking about somebody, well, never mind, I'm not going to go there. But any talent that you have that is an acceptably right talent, you can find a way to use it. The greatest in the kingdom are those who serve. Sometimes we get in a habit of saying, no, I can't. But you can love, and you can encourage, and you can help. I saw a cartoon a while back of two turtles talking to one another. And one of them said, sometimes I'd like to ask why God allows poverty and famine and injustice when He could do something about it. And the other turtle said, I'm afraid God might ask me the same question. There are probably some things you can't do. There are some things I can't do. But there are some things I can do. And there are some things that every one of us can do. And the Lord has blessed us incredibly to be a part of a family where we have the opportunity and the encouragement to use our talents, to have a ministry. And my greatest hope for you, in fact, my job as a leader, is to help train God's people for the work of ministry. I hope that you have a ministry. I hope you have one that's satisfying to you. But if you don't, start analyzing what you can do. Sit down with somebody that's a friend of yours and say, you know, have you seen anything in me that I could do that you think would be beneficial to other people? If that's the only way you can come up with something, we'll do that for one another. Don't wait for somebody to come up to you and say, will you do so-and-so? Don't get lost in anonymity. Don't get so comfortable not using the talents that God has given you that you fall into a lifestyle of doing that. Let's all stand and sing.